There, do you have any idea what you're listening to?
London Philharmonic?
It's Venus.
Huh?
Venus.
Why not? We've bounced signals off the moon's surface. There's no reason that Venus shouldn't radiate impulses.
I don't mean the static. Can't you hear it, the other thing?
What other thing?
Listen to it, Paul. Listen to the voice.
Welcome to Media Geek. This is your weekly look at all the grassroots and independent media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. My name is Paul Riesmanell, and I'm your host. On today's program, what is on with radio? XM Sirius, they merged, and now they're on the streets, and all the major radio companies trading under $2 a share. Well, we're going to take a look at it with my friend, John Anderson of DIYmedia.net, and also himself, a radio scholar. So you do want to stay tuned. Hello, John. Thanks for joining me again.
It's always a pleasure, Paul.
Well, so let's take a look at radio for a little while today.
Oh, it's in the toilet. It's swirling around the hole. It's great. It's a great time to be watching the industry if you're not working in the industry. And those who are working in the industry may shortly not be working in the industry. Things are that bad across the bandscan. AM, FM, satellite, everything is just imploding. And a lot of it's due to the, you know, the economy and whatnot, but a lot of it's due to bad decisions made due to consolidation spurred 12 years ago. And it's just, it's amazing to watch. I don't think I've ever seen a corporate implosion of an industry-wide size like this in my lifetime. And it's just, makes for great fodder. Definitely makes for great fodder.
And so, to put things in perspective, you have experience inside the belly of the beast. You were in commercial radio up in Wisconsin at the Wisconsin Radio Network. So you've seen it from both sides. You're not just somebody who has been an outside analyst, but you were in the belly of the beast. You were a radio journalist, and you split. You got out while was good.
Yeah, well, I saw the writing on the wall, my friend. I graduated from college in 1996 with a degree in broadcast journalism, and I had already had about 3 to 4 years of real-world radio news experience under my belt. So I went straight from going into college, from college into a job in radio journalism. And as I made my way up in different markets and whatnot, ending up at the Wisconsin Radio Network, this all took place between 1996 and 2000. And in 1996, Congress passed the Telecommunications Act, which removed the national ownership cap on radio stations. And slowly but surely, especially when I began working for a network where I began to actually listen and interface with people working at different stations in different parts of the state of Wisconsin, I started watching newsrooms drop off the radar, just close down, be shuttered, die. Because bean counters were coming in, buying up clusters of stations, and then basically doing a cost-benefit analysis of each department. And news is a lost leader. You can never sell enough advertising to cover what it costs to employ a reporter. For as cheap ass as you make in radio, it's still not enough. They can't sell enough spots to do it. So I watched radio news basically as a career wither and die on the vine, and I made the decision in 2000, I like this career. It's something I wished I could have done, but the political and economic direction of the industry is not moving in a direction that's beneficial for me, so I need to bail. And so I saw the decimation of radio from the inside out. And the fact that this is happening now, you know, some 8, 9 years later, is really not that much of a surprise to me. It's the scale and the scope that is really a surprise to me.
Well, the boom years, so to speak, I mean, were really a boom beginning there in 1996. The ferocity with which companies like Clear Channel went on a buying spree, buying up whole clusters of stations in cities, as many as they were legally permitted to in most cases, and often leaving aside markets where they weren't able to come in and buy that legal limit, was amazing. And one of the sides of this, of course, is that how do you get all that operating capital to buy up stations, often at far above what their market valuation had been? You know, the mom and pop stations and things like that.
That's how all of these radio consolidators, like Clear Channel, Radio 1, Viacom, CBS, you know, all of those, sowed the seeds of their own demise when they went on their consolidation binge, because they did not actually use direct capital to pay for these stations outright. They essentially leveraged debt and paid for stations at multiples of what their actual values were. I mean, back in the heydays of consolidation, the late 90s, stations in major markets were trading for $200 million for a single FM radio station. $200 million? There's no way that a single FM radio station is going to make back $200 million in even like 10 years. It's kind of like the tech bubble and the housing bubble. The value of spectral property was inflated to such a degree because there was such this demand by consolidators that all of these huge companies took on all of this massive debt and thought that because they were going to be able to control the advertising market in those markets, they would simply pay back the debt. And guess what? It didn't happen.
No, they didn't.
Economies of scale did not kick in, and then we had a bad economy happen, and everything just kind of fell down like a house of cards.
Clear Channel really thought they had a game going there, right?
Yeah, because they've gone from Clear Channel, 1,200 radio stations, public company traded on Wall Street.
With an advertising business,
with an outdoor advertising business, with exclusive distribution deals to put advertising on bus kiosks and newspaper racks in cities across the country.
And a music promotion business.
They were one of the largest music promotion venue businesses in the country. All of these things were taking place, and they invested too much in radio. And they tried to promote synergy, like use the radio stations to promote concerts at the venues they owned and things like that. But it simply didn't work. The cash flow wasn't there. And so Clear Channel, the Mays family, the head patriarch, Lowry Mays, came down with health problems, and he stepped down. And his two sons, Mark and the other one, I think also his name begins with an M, took over and basically ran the company into the ground. They took all the cash they could, they took all the perks they could, and they ran the company into the ground. And just, 2 years ago, Clear Channel went private.
Mm-hmm.
They were bought out by a venture capital firm who took on their debt. And the first thing that venture capital firm did was sold off more than 30% of Clear Channel's radio station.
Right.
And now Clear Channel is firing people en masse. They let more than 1,000 people go about a month ago. The new rumor is on February 20th, there's going to be another mass round of firings. The first one inside the company was called Hiroshima. The second one is now called Nagasaki. And they're firing advertising people, too,
wow,
not just the programming. They've cut programming to the bone. They're now firing program directors and actual advertising people. They've brought people in, they've trained them, and then a week later, they fire them.
Wow.
And you know how bad it is? Get this. Some major radio station clusters in major markets now are back to the dollar-a-holler advertising model, where they're faxing their long-standing clients and saying, yo, 100 spots for $100.
Jeez.
Please.
And,
please,
and this is even in small markets.
Begging for change.
Even in small markets in the early 90s, you could expect a spot to trade for at least double digits.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Especially in a day part like a morning or afternoon drive time. Oh, yeah.
It's interesting.
But
to me, because, you know, I got educated.
The debt is too high.
Yep.
Oh, man. Amazing.
I learned about radio in the late 80s and the early 90s. And so before the big consolidation, but when, you know, certain segments like AM radio weren't doing very well. And the conventional wisdom that broadcast students were learning then, students who might want to go into careers in radio, was that Radio 1 was a talent-driven business, right? That's and with two types of talent, at least on air. your program director, and your on-air talent. We were taught basically your on-air talent was reasonably expendable because for every, you know, every one person who was on air in any decent decent-sized market, there were 10 others out there ready to go. So, you know, the top talent, you know, your Howard Sterns of the day, sure, could take top dollar. But, you know, down the line, it was still a talent-driven business, and you had to have talent to make any money. The other talented program director, but the one they told us, if you really want to make money in radio, you're going to sell ads.
Yeah.
If you go to a radio station parking lot and you find the Cadillacs and the Mercedes-Benz and the BMWs,
they're not owned by the news people.
That's not the news people. It's not the on-air talent, and it's not the program director. It's your head of sales. It's your head of ad sales.
Yep.
So to hear, and that was probably the only place you could continue to be really employed in radio over the last 12 years. And so to hear that Clear Channel is basically eating its own, you know, is basically, you know, chopping off its own limbs, its own
feet. And they're not alone. They are not alone.
It shows you how bad it is.
They're the largest boil, you know, on the ass of the industry. That is essentially festering right now.
It's incredible. Bad. Because,
you know,
also at that
karma
time,
is a bitch in a lot of ways, really. I mean, if you think about it economically, the decisions mm-hmm. that were made and things, this is economic karma coming back. And unfortunately, I mean, there's a good side of this we have to remember. The value of stations is going to come down.
Right.
Possibly to fire sale, quote-unquote, prices, which will give an opportunity for real live local operators who believe in the essence of radio, which is its local ability to connect with its listenership. It'll give those people an opportunity to reinvigorate the medium. Will it be enough to save the medium as we know it today? I don't know. And I have my real doubts about that, and that's kind of scary, but it's still fun to watch this particular meteor, you know, crash to the ground.
Well, it gives us a great jumping-off point, John, because you are listening to Media Geek, your weekly look at the world of grassroots and independent media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. I'm talking to John Anderson, proprietor of DIYmedia.net, a former morning radio host and anchor at the Wisconsin Radio News at the Wisconsin Radio Network, and right now is a doctoral candidate at the University of Illinois Institute of Communications Research, researching radio. He joins me frequently. So, John, satellite radio is also not doing well. And now it hasn't had quite the same kind of run as broadcast radio, but it seems to suffer from maybe some of the same causal agents in terms of leveraging.
You can say that. First of all, the whole idea of putting together a satellite radio broadcast service sounded really good on paper, but actually, building the infrastructure to make a satellite radio broadcast service is hella expensive. We're talking about rockets launching very, you know, sensitive, expensive equipment into orbit in order to for you to listen to Howard Stern and Bob Dylan and Martha Stewart, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And the amount of capital necessary to launch satellites in orbit to provide nationwide coverage it ranges in hundreds of millions of dollars. And two companies initially did this, Sirius and XM. And the FCC set up the satellite radio service so that there would be competition. There could not just be one satellite radio company. There had to be two. And so for a few years, both companies ran along. They both built huge studios, one in New York City, one in Washington, D.C. They looked like the bridge of the Starship Enterprise. You know, I mean, they were just technologically advanced as heck. They invested heavily in drawing talent onto the network. So they brought Howard Stern from CBS Radio and Viacom, Infinity Broadcasting, over to Sirius because Mel Karmazin, who is the CEO of Sirius, used to actually run Infinity Broadcasting. And when he left, he brought his main man with him. And they made these outlandish deals. I mean, Howard Stern has his own wing in the Sirius building, with staff and $500 million in contract, you know, it's crazy. And so not only did they overinvest in this infrastructure, and they overinvested in their talent, but they also didn't figure out, much like Consolidated Radio did, they never figured out how to make a viable revenue model that could sustainably take down the debt that it took to put the service on the air. Most satellite radio customers actually get their service at the beginning for free. For example, if you have a satellite TV service like DirecTV or something, a lot of times that will include like the XM or Sirius satellite radio package, and it's just kind of part of the parcel of the deal. And so you're not necessarily paying for the radio directly, you're paying for the television service, and this is a value-added proposition. Or let's say you buy a new car, and it comes with a Sirius or XM satellite radio in it. For the first year, the car manufacturer picks up the cost of your subscription. And so basically, for the first year, you don't have to pay to listen to satellite radio. Now, how many people actually turn around when the subscription is up and they actually have to start forking out dough and pay on a month-to-month basis or yearly or whatever for this service? The answer turns out to be not enough to finance the investment made to create the service in the first place. And so Sirius and XM have never, never, ever, ever, ever turned a profit. And it has become so bad that, a year or two ago, they petitioned the FCC to merge because they said that if they did not merge, they would fail. And satellite radio service, as we know it, would fail. And so the FCC, after much consternation and a review from the Department of Justice and everything, allowed them to merge. And everything was supposed to be fine and hunky-dory, right? Well, in order to cut costs and help try to trim their operating expenses, the first thing that Sirius XM, as it is now known, did is they removed channels that were duplicates. And not all of the channels they had were duplicates, but right, in the process, they removed listener choice, and they actually cut some channels that were very popular to certain niche audiences within the constellation of listeners to satellite radio. So that, first of all, they pissed off their listener base. The second thing they did was they started to actually cut back on their commitment to provide commercial-free advertising. They started to put commercials on certain channels, and then kind of, you know, like mold, it grew. And many, many channels now on satellite radio, even though you're paying for it, you still have to listen to advertising.
Well, and that was one of the biggest draws that people had to satellite radio, was the fact that it would be commercial-free.
But they're forced into a corner, and they had to try to do it. They're trying to sell ads, and guess what? Even that revenue is not enough to make up for this incredible amount of debt that they've taken on so far. And so now, stuff really hit the fan over the last couple of weeks when Sirius XM's part of their debt, which is in the billions, it's north of $1 billion at least. I don't know the exact figure off the top of my head. Part of that was coming due, something like $530 million. Or so is coming due like this week. And if Sirius XM didn't pay this, they were going to have to declare bankruptcy. And so Mel Karmazin fought for his job and did a deal with a company that has a controlling interest in the major satellite TV provider, DirecTV. And they basically bought stock and gave cash to Sirius XM, allowing them to float their next two debt payments, which are approximately $850 million. So about through March, Sirius XM has enough capital and liquidity and operational funding to continue to do what it's doing. After March, all bets are off. But one of the things you have to notice is the FCC got its panties in a twist over the fact when two of the satellite TV providers, EchoStar and DirecTV, wanted to merge, right? Now we have a situation where the primary player, you could say, in satellite television now has what you could call a controlling interest in what is essentially the only satellite radio broadcasting service. Yeah. It's like consolidation in space.
Yes. Real quick, I need to say, Lori, who made a pledge earlier, thank you very much, but we need to ask you to call us back in because we didn't get all the information we need from you. So, Lori, you made a pledge earlier. If you wouldn't mind giving us a call back, 847-491-WNUR. We just need a little bit more information from you. We really appreciate it, and thanks so much for calling in and making a pledge. The thing that's sort of absurd about satellite radio, I always thought struck me as absurd, because is the economics of it. Because with satellite television, essentially you were just taking an existing model of cable television and putting it in space. And that is as DirecTV or as Dish Network. You really didn't have the cost of program production to bear or acquisition of talent. You were working from and making deals with existing networks. And in some cases, they had interests in other networks or the existence of these new outlets beyond cable stimulated the development of more networks and stimulated development of more channels. But there was a kind
they
of a separation.
Front the money for that.
Yeah. So, you know, because there certainly was a pretty significant investment in the physical infrastructure of launching satellites into space and all the technology and being able to, you know, get the receivers and the dishes out of people's homes.
You also have to remember that the time when satellite television actually got off the ground, so to speak, cable penetration was not at the rate that it is today.
Right.
So there was enough people out there who basically didn't have access to cable. And so satellite television actually served a niche for people who could not get pay television above and beyond the major networks. So there was something, you know, there that was unique and gave it. It was not a complete duplicate of a model. It actually brought new people into the pay TV fold.
Right, but with radio, I mean, not all the channels are operated by SiriusXM. They do have an NPR channel. I think you know there's CNN Headline News and some other
they contract
large
out.
Syndicator
they actually
ones.
Have program providers that supply them with shows too. Mm-hmm. They do that as
but
well.
Yet it's those huge acquisitions like Howard Stern, I think, you know, was always held up because they paid more money than he was worth in broadcast, really. And he was worth it, I mean, at the time for Infinity Broadcasting, now CBS. He was certainly worth what he was being paid. He could anchor stations. You know, if he got put onto certain stations with a demographic of young men, you know, the 18 to 35 demographic, he could anchor a whole day of programming. He brought in so many listeners in the morning. But the same kind of phenomena wasn't enough to build a radio network on, since there's only so many hardcore Stern fans willing to go out and buy all new satellite radio. And that's only one demographic, and a relatively slim one at that, which can float, you know, one station in one market, but very difficult to float an entire service on.
Yeah, and I mean, they also did a lot of deals with other content providers, too, like NASCAR and Major League Baseball and the National Hockey League, National Football League, and things like that. And some of those broadcast rights are coming due as well. Like sometime after March, SiriusXM owes the NFL $43 million if they want to keep broadcasting games. And now, with the ubiquity of television moving beyond places like your living room, for example, being able to watch it in the back of your car, you know, like people are buying minivans now with, TVs mounted in the back seats of the headrest, you know, and things like that. It's hard to justify why you should listen to the game or the race when you can actually watch it. And so they had to not only invest in talent, but they had to also create these deals to provide the service with something that gave it a semblance of exclusivity and newness and specialness to terrestrial radio. And that, you know, Paul, if you think about it, really wasn't that hard to sell because terrestrial radio was eating itself, as you put it.
And of course, Mel Karmazin was one of the people who helped it along that path when he was at Infinity.
He
sort of made the dinner, and now he's eating it. But
some sort of necrotic bacteria businessman. The anti-Midas.
The funny thing, of course, is that Clear Channel and all the large radio broadcasters have been crying competition in their beer, saying, "Well, it's satellite radio and the internet which is killing us." Now we have satellite radio, you know, completely on the fence, really not doing well on the ropes. And what are they crying? Are they crying, "Oh, it's the internet that killed us"? Never mind that as of yet, no one's really making any money on internet radio. And by numbers, there's no indication that more people are listening to internet radio, certainly than broadcast radio. And, you know, they say, "Oh, people are watching more video or people are doing whatever." But, you know, the argument that Mel Karmazin would made and XM Sirius would have made about traditional radio as well, traditional radio is rotten, right? It's no longer giving people what they want. It's serving up the same 20 songs, every rotation playlisted, lots of no real personalities. So, you know, the whole sell was, well, we're going to give them something that, like what radio used to be. And now, right. Just, you know, not even years later, really, now they're going back to looking a lot more like Clear Channel of the stratosphere.
Yeah, it's really a sad situation to watch. And, you know, going back to your question of what's their excuse? What's Mel Karmazin's excuse for driving satellite radio into the ground? And you know what? I haven't really heard a good one yet. I think they're still just crying, over the fact that their constellation of pretty satellites is on the verge of being turned off. Because they can't pay the bills, but if they had to make an argument, a valid argument, I would say that it's all about the war for the dashboard. There's two things that satellite radio has been doing somewhat well at before everything kind of started falling apart around that. The first one was they were offering an alternative to people who were doing their radio listening, and still, primarily these days, much radio listening is done in cars. And so if you could get free radio without commercials in your car, that gave people the impetus to actually check it out for a while, right? Well, in the intervening years, other new technologies have come along that allow you to customize your own listening experience while you're driving wherever you're going, right? Now, as an option in many vehicles, in your dashboard, you can get a USB jack, which means all you need to do is bring your iPod, and there's no need for radio at all anymore, right? There is the beginning of technologies being introduced into cars, especially passenger vehicles, that will allow for access to wireless internet broadband access or 3G cellular telephony, where you can possibly tune in internet radio streams while you're on the move. This is still something that is off on the horizon, but it is happening. And so the war for the dashboard was lost. It was lost first by terrestrial radio. Sirius XM had a chance. They had a sliver of it, and they lost it too. The other thing that I think is really interesting that someone pointed out on one of their blogs was, have you ever noticed now when you go into a store or a restaurant or something, they're no longer playing Muzak? Typically now it's actually Sirius XM.
Muzak declared bankruptcy.
Yeah, because Muzak's declared bankruptcy. So
the actual company, Muzak, it's a real company.
If there's actually maybe a silver lining for SiriusXM, it's that they can provide background music to people shopping for their brassieres or something like that. You know, I mean, but still, even there, that pot of money is not enough to service your debt and keep yourself afloat. And it's just a mess. It's a wonderful, wonderful mess to watch.
Yeah, it was just a week ago that Muzak filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection. So, John, DIYMe.net is your website. And thank you for joining.
Well, that brings to a close another edition of Media Geek. I'll be back in one more week with more news and views on our media environment. In the meantime, of course, go to Media Geek Online. At MediaGeek.net. It's home to the Media Geek blog, and the radio show is at radio.mediageek.net, where you can listen in your browser, download the program, or subscribe to the podcast. And the Twitter feed is at twitter.com/MediaGeek. If you have any comments about the program, I do want to hear them. Send them to me, Paul, at MediaGeek.net. Thanks for tuning in.